Empire of the Suns.
Suns.
Empire of the Suns.
Wet like on book. Wet like on book. Wet like on book.
Arizona Sports presents the Empire of the Suns podcast.
Empire of the Suns.
Hello there and welcome to the Empire of the Suns podcast. My name is Kellen Olson, joined as always by Kevin Zimmerman. I have to remind myself sometimes, Kevin, that we're doing these over Zoom and we used to not do it like this. I'm just so used to it. What's up, buddy?
Not much. Just in the heart of football season, and somehow we're doing draft stuff, and it's a good time, I guess. Like, we kind of see maybe the NBA season's not going to start soon, but we have this going for us, so we're just going to cherish every moment.
I agree, definitely. Kevin's energy on the podcast during the pandemic has never changed from, like, let's cherish everything we've got while it's going on. You're still, bless your stance not changing 7 months later, that, like, you're just waiting for everything to go as horribly wrong as it possibly can, and you're just trying to, but in a positive way, if that makes sense, where you're just trying to take in all the football you can because the Titans can't figure it out.
Somehow played football. I don't know.
What's going on there? It made me laugh. I saw that Zach Lowe was getting made fun of on Twitter by his ESPN cohorts because he apparently requires people to be on video when they do these podcasts now because he wants people to see him gesturing. It's really funny. Me and you are completely acceptable with the non-video format. I'm fine with watching your mic thing flicker on and off. But yeah, it's strange how we're now 7 months into doing the podcast like this, and it's become so regular that I don't even think about it in the other way anymore.
Wait, do we have to self-create our own, self-manufacture energy by doing that? Should we be doing that? Is that a thing?
Oh, like actually gesturing and stuff? I don't know. Am I a gesturer? You don't really realize when you gesture unless people point it out, right? Like, I don't think I've ever been much of a gesture person.
No, I think we generally, like, podcast in person where we're staring at screens anyway, so.
Correct, yeah. We're very on brand for our age group and our generation of just always staring at screens and not making eye contact whenever possible.
Yeah.
So let's go into the wings. If you guys missed last week's episode, I recommend going back. We are going to take 3 weeks to do as much draft, quote-unquote, prep as possible. The goal, as I said last week, is essentially that if you haven't been paying attention to any sort of draft stuff, you are going to have a pretty good indication of how this draft is looking in terms of Phoenix Suns perspective. So guys like Anthony Edwards, James Wiseman, and LaMelo Ball, we're not going to be talking about because those guys are presumed to go somewhere in the top 3 to 5. We will talk about them like a week or two before the draft, week of the draft, things like that. But for now, we're prepping from a Suns perspective, both for ourselves, really, and then for you guys listening as well, to get you guys all informed and prepared to say that you hate the Suns pick, like we always do. On the wing, that's what we've got this week. We did guards last week, and we're going to do bigs next week because, as I said, this draft has a very unique factor to it where there are really like 15 to 20 guys that you can really talk yourself into being into consideration for the Suns at the number 10 overall pick. And they've got an interesting roster dynamic where they need a third guard. They could need some backup bigs depending on how the offseason goes. And the wings, I just wrote about this yesterday on ArizonaSports.com. Who really knows what direction they're going to go in with those guys this offseason? Is Kelly Oubre going to be back? Are they going to fully lean into Bridges and Johnson starting? What exactly happens there? I think we should just start there, Kevin, before we get to the names and like the format here. Why do you think it wouldn't be a crazy idea for the Suns to draft a wing? Because we just talk about it like it makes sense and like these kind of guys would fit in. And I agree. I'm not going to be like the Cam Johnson pick last year and be like, rah, 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 he can only play 14 minutes or whatever. I think the team dynamic has kind of changed since then. But why do you think it would still make sense for this team to draft a wing when they've got three, are in my opinion, three good ones right now that are all fairly young?
I think you start and you say, obviously, Kelly being gone, whether that's even next year, if he stays this year and he just doesn't re-sign, we talk about it all the time. We kept proving that the Suns, as constructed, play really well with like wings, at least at the two forward spots. And if you look at other things, let's say they don't find that third guard, or just the draft order goes where the third guard's not there for them at number 10, then, okay, well, how do you make the best out of that pick then? Do you move Devin Booker and make him essentially a backup point guard? Monty mentioned that before the bubble. That's not ideal. Obviously, those are issues that we can talk about later. But, okay, what if you have Mikal and you have Cam and Kelly and another wing playing three spots now on that unit if Book's kind of handling some backup point guard duties, essentially? I mean, those are just a few things. I think that time and time again, teams have proven that, look, the wing position, there are a lot of talented guys out there. And just from a value standpoint, is it worth paying Kelly all that money, right? Like Cam and Mikal are good examples of just you're getting guys on rookie deals. Maybe you spend that money elsewhere. Maybe you spend that money paying DeAndre and Mikal to keep them in the long-term future. So I think there are just like a lot of reasons where I don't think you should get a guy who's just like them just for the sake of it, but you got to consider just how these pieces fit. And if they fit kind of just the DNA as the team as a whole, then you don't really worry about having too much wing depth. Cause again, you can play a lot of those guys, I guess, at the same time.
And they made it easier by essentially already doing it, right? Because they started Cam at the four, they started Kelly at the four, or Mikal at the four, whoever was the four in that situation. I think that's the wrong way to actually think about it. It's not that those guys show that they could play those positions. It's that the Suns showed that they can run this specific style where they don't have a traditional power forward. And it is essentially just, we have two wings, we have two initiators, and we have the rim protector, to kind of take it back to something I wrote about earlier this week, which JJ Redick talked about on his podcast. I think I brought it up on this one, that he just basically sees like the league isn't positions now. It's just roles. And there's three of them. There's initiators, wings, and rim protectors. And that's kind of what this is leaning towards. And as we'll get into with this class, I think that it's just all of these guys, the wings that we're talking about specifically, there isn't really a, I'm kind of blanking off the top of my head in terms of like thinking of a recent example, but I mean like off the top of my head, like someone like Jason Tatum, who out of Duke just looked like a ball dominant kind of scorer. There really isn't that type of wing in this class. I think Nesmith is probably the scoring archetype guy that we'll talk about the most. But even with him, you get a really good three-point shooter in terms of what we saw out of Vanderbilt, both just watching him, and then I believe his numbers were something like 50% from three or something in like the 12 games he played before he got hurt. So if you guys didn't listen last week and you just still haven't been listening to me yet, that's very sad. I take it very seriously when I give out recommendations like this and you hurt my feelings. Second of all, we're breaking it into groups. So we've got three guys at the top who we're going to call the big three. And these are the three guys who we expect to kind of either be in the mix for the Suns or are just in the range of the position group we're talking about. And I think the latter more applies to this group, in that there's a good chance that two of these guys are gone, maybe even all three are gone by the time the Suns pick. And it'll be more likely that it'll be someone coming from our other groupings, which me and Kevin are each going to pick someone who we have as our guy, quote unquote, meaning the guy that we love for the Suns, that's maybe like 5-10 spots too low, but is still conceivably like in this range. And then we're going to have the dark horse pick. So for example, for guards last week, I picked Grant Riller as my dark horse, and then my guy was Kyra Lewis. So Kyra Lewis, someone ranked in like the 15 to 25 range, conceivably could go at 10. It would be a reach, of course, or whatever. And then dark horse is someone a little bit deeper, first round bubble guys, and that's where someone like Riller fits in. You ready to get going, Kevin?
Sorry. Yep, I'm ready.
Don't apologize, Kevin.
Had struggles with the unmute button. Ready to go.
Oh, I just mentioned how seasoned we are at this, at the old unmute, mute, and all these shenanigans going on in our households as we do this. And yet, here you are just proving that we're still inept at it. Very sad, Kevin. Very sad indeed. All right, we've got Denny Abdia, and I practiced that name like 15 times to make sure I said it right because I've been saying Devin Vassell for like 6 months, and it's Devin Vassell. But I think I said Denny's wrong name wrong there anyway, even after I heard him say it myself. So Denny comes out of Maccabi Tel Aviv. Does that sound familiar? If it does, that's because where Dragan Bender came from. So 6'9" wing, quote-unquote, from Israel, 19 years old, 6'9", 215, 6'9", wingspan on him. Over there for Maccabi this year, he played in 59 total games. They play a whole lot of games over there, 21.7 minutes per game. He averaged 9 points, 4.6 rebounds, 2 assists per game. The point that I keep making on Abdia, Kevin, is that he is a playmaking wing, and that is something that the Suns certainly don't have and is like a skill set that is not necessarily common and not one that we're really going to be seeing in this class. The argument and the discussion around him is around his shot, and it really, really applies to the Suns because, as we've talked about with him in this podcast the past couple of months and as I've written about in other places, I think that this is a guy that completely fits with what the Suns do because he's a high IQ player who does a lot of team basketball things well. He's a really great help defender, and weak side rim protection is something that's becoming more and more important. I think we've seen someone like Devin Booker, for example, has like a weird knack for just being the help guy and going up and giving verticality. I think he kind of almost like takes pride in doing it, you can tell. And Abdia is really quite good at it. And while his on-ball defense is like fine and there's room for improvement with like his overall athleticism and stuff and just the first step, he's a little bit underrated in that regard. I'd really hate to like label the guy as sneaky athletic. I hate that label for just anyone in general. But I think that he has some real speed to his game. And then once he gets his handle going, which isn't really that bad, I think that he can get by guys. And the vision is there. The passing ability is there. There's a little bit of scoring chops there as well. But the shot is a nightmare. He's shooting around 50 to 60% from the free throw line. I didn't read his percentages there from his season. So he shot 50.5% from the field in those 59 games. He shot 33.3% from three, but he only shot 58.8% from the line. And one thing we've learned over the past 10 years or so is that free throw percentage is a good indicator of future success for three-point shooting. And he fully addressed it during his combine interview, said that he wanted to talk about it, and he didn't blame, but his and again, like, he's just giving excuses. It is what it is. He said that, like, due to an inconsistent role and not really playing that much, that's when his shot wasn't really falling. But when he came back from the break, that's when he started playing more, and that's when he felt like his shot was falling more, which it was. But with that being said, Kevin, he's going to come in as a rookie. He's going to have to earn playing time, and he's going to be on inconsistent minutes, and he's still going to have to hit shots. So it's one of those you got to pick a middle ground somewhere to find there. What are your impressions on him, and do you think that Phoenix, like, makes sense at all for him? He's a guy that I think he's the first guy we've talked about so far that he probably won't be there when the Suns pick. We should say that.
Yeah, I think the big thing with him is he's more of a power forward like type of wing where, like, I think he can play full-time power forward. I don't know if he's athletic enough to, like, you know, chase around Paul George and that type of thing, but he's definitely fitting of, like, how the Suns play, right? Like, Monty always talked about Dario was this connector, and that's even why, like, they liked Frank. Even though Frank, you know, his issues, because he was good at moving the ball. And I think if you have a guy that actually has like that good of a handle, obviously is more athletic than Dario as a smaller, lighter guy, then I think there's a lot of reasons to like it. Now with that shot, it's that really changes his playmaking from the four too. Like if you're not hitting the three, then no one's going to chase you off the line and make him easily able to like drive by guys. And then you don't have to worry about how athletic he is because he just takes a dribble or two and makes the right play. But yeah, if that shot's not going, then that kind of just limits his upside. So I think that's why it's the biggest concern there, is because like that makes what he's good at even possibly elite, I guess you could say, or at least above average.
Yeah, we should preface that if you've never seen him shoot a basketball before, the mechanics aren't really the issue. There's obviously at this stage of development for a lot of these guys when they're 18 or 19, there are obviously like little tweaks in there where like you're never really going to find like a perfect jumper at this stage. It's going to be pretty rare too. So there's obviously things he can fix. But with that being said, it's pretty good. It's not like LaMelo's at all where there's clear inconsistencies that are affecting his jumper. So I don't really know, in my opinion, and we'll get to this with another prospect here we're going to be talking about in a bit. I don't really know how the Suns can take someone who you have jumper concerns about, just because their primary identity as a team right now is Devin Booker and DeAndre Ayton running a two-man game around them, and that means everyone else on the floor needs to be able to space the floor at a somewhat competent level. Now, if they work out Abdia, which we should mention that the NBA is allowing in-person workouts, teams get up to 10 total between all prospects, so they do have to be they do have to pick the right guys. And again, like, they might not be able to work out who they want. Like, agents are going to control workouts at always, so that's going to be kind of a mess, as it always is. But they could work him out, see the jumper, hear from him on it, and like what they hear, and take him. But I'd be really surprised if they're just really bringing in anyone that, like, you look at everyone outside of DeAndre, right? Like, they brought in Kaminsky, they brought in Baines. Diallo was the only guy who really came in who they had jumper concerns. You had, like, jumper concerns about off the top of my head, if I'm remembering correctly, and that's, like, end of the bench guys. So I don't really see the path towards them taking him. And I guess the one argument that I would make is, Kevin, where do you rank him in terms of how raw he is as opposed to how ready he is for just his age group in general, like how much the professional minutes have helped for him? Because in my opinion, he looks like one of the more ready guys in the class to play right now.
Yeah, I guess the only thing for him is like physically where he's at. He is a young kid, and like what we saw with Dragan Bender is that sometimes takes quite a bit just for him to be able to bang with big NBA athletes. Cause again, he's not super the biggest dude or the greatest athlete. And you can probably tell me more about that, but he's definitely ahead of like where Bender was when Bender came into the league. Obviously he's a little older too, but I think that's my big concern, because if the Suns are drafting him, you're kind of like, all right, you got to produce certainly next year, if not this year, depending on what else they do kind of with that power forward spot.
Yeah, and again, a guy that you're going to see ranked anywhere from like 4 to like 9, maybe 11 or 13 if people are really down on him, but still someone who's going to hold a firm spot in the lottery. And I think to end on him, I think that he's Dario, but just with a little bit more quickness and just like savvy in terms of like Dario has more power to this game. This is more finesse. And that's not to say that Abdia plays soft, because he doesn't, but it's just like a difference in like the playmaking styles of like a bigger guy like that. Essentially, there's definitely some Dario elements to his game, don't get me wrong, but obviously if like they're bringing back Dario, like this is like not like it shouldn't even be thought of, because like Dario is the guy who adds like the little bit of extra passing and playmaking ability in that specific spot, so he wouldn't really be needed. You ready to move on?
Yeah, let's do it.
Devin Vassell. I did
there you
it.
Go.
You see?
Yay.
Oh my gosh. I can't believe people haven't been roasting me on Twitter. Does anyone even listen to this anymore, Kevin? Or are all the numbers a lie? Who knows anymore? So Devin Vassell, if you've been seeing that name, which if you've been following any sort of Suns Twitter like accounts in general or really anything like that, you will have seen this guy's name. He has really become one of the, I guess, darlings of this class. I don't think there's really any other way to put it. And there's a good reason why. He was a pretty good player at Florida State. 6'7", 6'10" wingspan, nearly 20, 19 right now, weighs 194. In his sophomore season at Florida State, Vassell averaged 12.7 points per game, 5 rebounds, an assist and a half, a steal and a half. He shot 49% from the field, 41.5% from three on 3.5 attempts per game, 74% from the line. This is a 3-and-D guy, Kevin, but a different type of 3-and-D guy than what you're like kind of projecting in your head, because Vassell is far more about being a total team defender than just an on-ball defender. In particular, his off-ball stuff is really noticeable when you watch them. You can like go into games expecting him to be like this off-ball menace and still get what you were like advertised, essentially. Like, you're not going to go in being too, it's like overhyped for you. You know what I mean? When you watch a guy and you're expecting to see something and then it kind of doesn't really pop, it usually does with him with the off-ball D. It's really that good. And then, of course, the three-point shooting numbers have been pretty good. 41.7% over his 2 years at Florida State. 168 total attempts is something that I should note. So it's not something where it's like Halliburton, where we had twice that much in terms of the numbers, but there's obviously some real catch-and-shoot appeal there. And then when you watch him play, kind of like Mikel at Villanova, you see the offensive wrinkles emerging. And one of my favorite stats of this draft that makes me continue to not be lower on Vassell than I might be is that he went from, as a freshman, just not really being a guy at all that took jumpers off the dribble, to taking quite a few of them for Florida State this year. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but they're impressive. And he was hitting them at a really good rate. So to me, you see a guy that's consistently improving or adding parts to his game, or just knew his role as a freshman and like stepped into more of a scoring role as a sophomore. There's a lot to like here, Kevin. You've been a noted Vassell hater. You hate him, Kevin. Why? Explain yourself.
I don't hate him.
I'm just messing with you. Go ahead.
I know. I think he's more right where Mikel was Mikel's sophomore year, where that was kind of like where he popped onto the radar of NBA draft people and was like, wait, there's something to this guy. Like, the numbers don't pop out at you, but you watch him and he's just doing all the right things. But Mikel came out after his junior year, right? And that was like a confirmation of, okay, this kid has these pieces and is just really starting to put it together.
Oh, that's to stop you right there. That's a really good point, actually, because if you'll remember, after Mikel's sophomore year, that's where it was like, this guy's a lottery pick. If he comes out right now, but he was actually ranked a little bit lower. I kind of like the comparison there. That's really good, because Mikel was like one of the best players in the country, like arguably the best player in the country in his junior year.
Yeah.
And maybe Vassell would be if he came back, right? Like, that's a really good point. Sorry, go on.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's Mikel, I think, just saw this jump. He was averaging like 9-10 points a game, and then he was, I think, at like 17 or 18 his junior year, and that really just was confirmation, I guess, that he was this guy, and this guy who was more than just like a guy who could knock down shots and defend really well. So I think maybe Vassell's just, I'm not super sold on him. He has the small frame. He has kind of just like, I don't know what he's going to be developmentally as more than a shooter, right? And I think that's important to note, because there are concerns with free throw shooting. If we're talking about Denny's, like, his was, let's see, 68% as a freshman, 74%, so not terrible. So I'm not super as sold as other people, I guess. That's my hating. But
no, I'm like, join in with you on that point. I'm with you there. I wrote in, like, I believe my first board, it was pretty much written in a defensive way because I knew people were going to hate where I had him, which was like more towards 10 than 5. And that's where I'm going to continue to have him, because in my opinion, the 3-and-D elements of his game that are so enticing for some just aren't that much for me, because the 3-point shooting wasn't on an extremely high volume. Just watching the looks that he got, I think watching is more convincing than the numbers for him specifically. But even with that in mind, I am not willing to bet my life on him being a 40% three-point shooter in the league, or 38% or 39%. And the numbers that I pretty much got to is like, okay, if Vassell is like a 36 to 37% three-point shooter in the league, like that's his number, that's not good enough. Like he needs to be 38, 39, 40, and probably more towards 40 if we're being honest with his role specifically, like with the offensive stuff, if it never comes to fruition, of course it could. And then the defense, like I said, more off ball than on. He's good on ball and does stuff well, but he is not like a lockdown guy. And that's where I hesitate a little bit, because Mikal and the comparisons there, like Mikal's got the 7'2" wingspan, Vassell's rocking 6'10", 6'11". It's a smaller build. And again, so think about the type of guy we're talking about, right? So more off ball than on ball. That's a nice way of saying that he's not extremely like his vertical, or not vertical, oh my goodness, his lateral explosion is not just at the top tier of where it needs to be for him to be just incredible on the ball. So you're talking about a smaller guy, so now he's guarding more ball handlers, he's guarding more guards. That's where I hesitate a bit and just kind of lean back a little bit on him. To bring up the numbers that I mentioned earlier, though, via Hoop Math last year, so as a freshman, he only took 15% of his shots as two-point jumpers. This year, that number jumped all the way to 39.5%, so nearly tripled. And on those two-point jumpers, he shot 43%, which is a really good number. This year, he also shot 24.5% of his shots at the rim, and he shot 69% at the rim. So when he was getting there, he was finishing, which was another really good, cool thing to watch with him. And another, that's where I take the Mikal comparison in a bit too, because Mikal's always had a really good knack for finishing around the rim. And this kid appears to have it as well. If you have anything else to say on his game, go ahead. But to follow up after that, where do you see him fitting in on the Suns specifically? Is he like the third guard who doesn't handle the ball? Is he just another 3-and-D guy you throw out there? What like is his specific role you would see if the Suns wind up taking him? Because we should mention, we didn't really get to it, like obviously like high IQ guy, if you can't tell by the off-ball stuff, just makes a lot of team plays and impacts games without scoring, and in those kinds of ways where, again, like the Mikal comparison comes back.
Yeah, I think just a few more things is just his shot volume from three. He only took 3.5 a game. That would obviously be more comforting if he took a lot more and was still shooting that pretty good percentage. But as far as his role with the Suns, that's like why I dislike it even more when you consider them, because he's not going to play other positions other than maybe a backup two or three. And then we already discussed, they already have the guys to do that. So he doesn't add anything, I guess is what I'm trying to say. He doesn't bring something different that the other wings that they have already have, right? Like they already have the shooting, they have the defense. And yeah, like making that Mikal comparison again, Mikal is not normal with his length and how he can actually stop one-on-one guys. Like how many times did he block like Jason Tatum's shot or something when he's just one-on-one going at him? That's not normal. That's not something that I don't think Devin Vassell can do, both because of his size and the lack of length. And so you need to make it up in other ways. And I just don't right now know what those other ways would be. That's not to say he can't develop as a guy who can do more off the bounce and stuff, but it just seems kind of redundant, I guess, especially with what other guys could be on the board at that point.
Okay, we are going to play a little bit of a guessing game here, and I think it'll give a better idea of like what we're talking about essentially in terms of where we have him, because people might think that we have him lower than we do when we discuss him. So what I want to do is just essentially roll through the top guys in this draft and just kind of show where exactly we would have him for the Suns, like in a ranking or whatever. So we're going to go through this list and we're going to assume the first eight picks are going to be something like as follows: Anthony Edwards, James Wiseman, Okoro, Ball, Okongwu, Avdija, Toppin, and then Haliburton. I'm going to say those eight guys are off the board. So just looking at this group, so for example, you've got guys like Killian Hastel on the board, Vassell, like I mentioned. You've got Kyra Lewis. You've got Patrick Williams, who we're going to talk about in a bit. Nesmith, we're going to talk about Bain, and so on. But where would you have Vassell ranked if those eight guys are off the board and we're two picks away from the Suns? How high are you putting him? So I'm putting Hayes over him, but I really think that's it. I think I would have him second. So I would basically have him as like a tenth guy on a Suns board when they pick 10th. I think that's right around where I would have him. Where would you have him?
Let me think. Who did you have off? Was Okoro off already?
So Okoro's off. Wiseman is off. Edwards is off. LaMelo Ball is off. Okongwu, Avdija, Toppin, and Haliburton. So those eight are gone.
Yeah, I mean, that's tough. I probably agree with you. I think Hayes is above him. You can convince me of Patrick Williams if you want. It drops off there. I'm not going to – I can't really argue very much over that. I will say that there are guys who I would – and we'll talk about when we talk about our dudes – I would pick maybe over him just because of the fit, but that's again me coming from it as a, I'm not sure about this draft class and I haven't probably firmed up my opinions on these guys, honestly, just because I haven't really watched enough. Probably not as much as you, obviously.
I think the take essentially is he should not be ranked higher at the expense of like the class, right? Like he should not be someone who is ranked like top three or top five in this class because it's like it's bad or whatever, right? Because I think that there are guys who still have I think are just better prospects than him. I don't really know how else to put it, and it's definitely going to be a confusing like couple minutes you heard there if you've never heard like Vassell talked about or whatever. But someone who I've seen people like commonly have as like a top three, top five option for the Suns, I'm just not quite there. Neither are you, but we're just about there. I am a lot higher on Devin Vassell though than I am on Isaac Okoro for the Suns. And Isaac Okoro, to me, to preface this, there's always one or two guys in the lottery that I just don't get it, and I don't get it on Isaac Okoro. And look, it is, I have been very wrong on a couple of guys before, so actually probably just bet on Isaac Okoro like all-star futures right now, because I said these kinds of things about Jason Tatum, I said them about De'Aaron Fox. There's other guys that I've been right on before, but there's a couple that I've been wrong on. Isaac Okoro is not as good of a prospect as those guys. I should say that. So to go over the Auburn wing, 6'6", is the height on this guy. 6'9" wingspan, 19 years old, just played his freshman year for Auburn. Like I said, weighs 225 for Auburn this year. He averaged 12.9 points, 4.4 rebounds, 2 assists a game, a block and a steal. He shot 51% from the field, 8 shots a game, or actually right around 9. On threes, he shot 28.6%, 2.5 attempts per game. He shot 67% from the line. He did get there 4.8 times a game, though, so he was getting fouled quite a bit despite the low number of shots that he was taking. Okoro is widely thought of as probably the best on-ball defender in the draft. Now, there's a debate between him and Vassell in terms of who's the best overall defender, but in terms of on-ball, it's probably Okoro. The 225 is no joke. Very sturdy frame that really helps him driving to the basket as well, where he just draws a lot of fouls, like I said, and finishes. But time after time, I watched this guy initially and I was kind of low on him. And then I dove back in about a month and a half ago, 2 months ago, whenever this was, when I did another edition of my board. And I was even lower on him after that. I don't understand why there is so much optimism around his shot. And I should preface that with guys like this, it usually comes down to the kid and how they're talking about him. And apparently, great kid, great work ethic, he's eventually going to figure it out is the consensus that everyone comes to, because this is someone who is not expected to even be available when the Suns pick. He's expected to be somewhere around the top 5 or 7. He's thought of pretty much as like the best wing in this class by a couple of different people. I personally don't see it, Kevin. I don't even have him ranked in the top 20 on the Suns board. What am I not seeing here?
I think
This is a weird comp, but do you remember when Stanley Johnson as a rookie started guarding LeBron in some playoff series for the Pistons?
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, oh, hey, this guy could be really good at what he does. And then we haven't seen him since.
Yeah.
I think that Isaac Okoro knows that's who he is. I think that's why people are thinking this way, because just his body type, his strength, his smoothness as an athlete is just like that good. And I think people are just attached to that because you could theoretically throw him on like LeBron James and say, okay, he's going to lock this dude down, you know, as well as you can lock LeBron James down, which we just saw is not very great. But I mean, I just see him as that kind of prospect, and making the Stanley Johnson comp, I think that you got to have the right kid with high basketball IQ, the right skill set, the aggressiveness to get the most out of that. And so if you sell me that he knows he's that type of player where it's defense first, it's, you know, making the right pass, not doing anything out of the realm of your skill set, and you work your butt off on the shot, then you can sell me that, because like we discussed, this class just doesn't have guys that are really good at anything. And he's really good at something with that defense that a lot of people covet. And that's, you know, still trending to be one of the most important things. Is just obviously with, again, Mikal, that's a difference maker in a game that you can see tangibly, that you can see make it a difference within a single game when it's not necessarily something in the box score. So I think that's kind of his role. And I would say he's a top 10 prospect just because of those few reasons, even though he's got those question marks.
Okay. Yeah. I would say that I would have him like right outside the top 10 on like my own board, but like factoring in the Suns where I'm thinking about shooting and thinking about like specific roles.
Yeah.
I don't think he fits on that team at all. I just don't see it. And I would be really, really surprised if the Suns took him, since I'm not going to do justice for like what I just gave as like an initial scouting report, just because I'm so low on him compared to everyone else. Here's ESPN's strengths for him. Has ideal physical tools for an NBA wing, was one of the most impactful defenders in the college game, and has all NBA potential thanks to his excellent lateral quickness. I think he means all defense potential. If he has all NBA potential, I think he'd be ranked higher than 7. All NBA potential thanks to his excellent lateral quickness, high intensity level, and sound technique. Was often tasked with shutting down the point of attack for Auburn, but has the size, strength, length, and toughness to defend power forwards as well. Has plenty of room to grow offensively, but already shows enough flashes as a ball handler and passer to leave plenty of room for optimism. Attacks the rim with purpose and finishes well inside the paint, while also showing potential operating out of pick and roll. Has good court vision, can play make with either hand, and generally shows a high basketball IQ. Lauded for his approach to the game, impacts the game without scoring. Excellent rebounder, plays a position and role that is extremely hard to find in today's NBA. That last point there, Kevin, is like pretty much exactly what you were talking about, kind of what I hinted at too. Just anytime a guy like this is ranked in this kind of range, it comes down to intangibles and something that we can't really pick up from where we were at behind a computer screen. But people who are talking to the kid and getting to know the people around him more, it just pretty much sounds like that's what he is. And something I'm going to talk about with Patrick Williams is like the archetype of a power wing. And I think that's what they're looking for essentially here in Okoro. I think the point here that Schmitz has in his role is basically saying, like, is he a good enough overall scorer to warrant being a top 10 pick? I don't even think it comes down to that, which I have questions about his scoring too. I just worry about the shot. He said perimeter shooting struggles are especially concerning, made just 29% from three and 67% from the line. I think that is without a doubt. If those numbers were just even a little bit higher, like they were on 33, 34%, the free throw was around 72, like maybe I would talk myself more into this guy as a top 10 pick, but the defense is really good. But leave it to me as someone and leave it to us as guys who like really value defense to be someone, me especially, who's just lower on him. Would you be surprised if the Suns took him? The shot does not look good, by the way. I should add that. No bueno.
Yeah. I think he would probably be picked by them if he's at 10, though. Like, I can see them being into him enough. Yeah. And just saying, you know what, we like the kid. We're going to have him work at it. We have enough wings for this year to get by. And if he needs to be helping us, then we'll work through it. But I would say just, I guess I'm buying everyone else's opinion on this and buying that he can get there as a shooter, I guess.
I'm glad we went on him third here. And like we said, I don't know if we made it clear enough there, a guy that's like ranked like 4 to 9, typically, I would be very surprised if he was there for the Suns, just based on everything that seeing, hearing, et cetera, sounds like he's just a guy that is going to be off the board when the Suns are up. So now that we got those really top three guys out of the way, which again, wouldn't surprise us if all three guys are gone when they're up. So who are the other wings the Suns could be considering? We'll start with Kevin's guy. Kevin's guy is Sadiq Bey out of Villanova. You kind of briefly mentioned him a couple episodes ago. Villanova wing, huh? Ever heard of those, Kevin? Sophomore, 6'8", 6'10", wingspan, weighs 216. In his sophomore season, 16.1 points a game. That jumped from 8.2, and he played similar minutes and started as well. So clearly like that Mikal type of taking on a role. 47% from the field on 11.8 attempts per game. And the nice one here, 5.6 attempts from three a game. He shot 45% from three. That put him at 4.6 attempts and 41.8% on three for his college career over 2 years. 77% at the line, three attempts a game. Did I mention the 5 rebounds and 2.5 assists? I think I might have. And a steal a game as well. What do you like about this guy, Kevin? Just your typical Villanova wing? Is there more to him? What's the deal? 6'8", 215. I mentioned that with Okoro and brought him up and going to bring Williams up here because we're talking about more like the power wing, right?
Yeah, so he's a bigger guy, and I sound like James Jones saying the Villanova thing matters probably, and that's hypocritical, I realize, but I think that if you thrive in that system, like they just produce these guys with that get overlooked when they're in school, and then like Brunson, like Mikal, and like you look at the numbers with Bey, like what is he? He's just kind of good at everything. Like 45% from three on a significant number, 5.6 shots a game. You watch him; he's not the best athlete, but he's just smooth. He can actually kind of be the ball handler in pick and roll situations sometimes. Like he has decent vision and the shots there, defensively, you see him put the work in. He's not like super great horizontally moving, but he's, I think when you're smart enough and you give effort like a guy like Jared Dudley, then you can survive and even be pretty good in that and not let guys attack you. And with that size, I think he can switch and be pretty versatile. So I think like as a starting power forward, he has potential just because I think he has enough size where he can get boards. And then just with the shooting and playmaking, I really like the fit. I don't know if he's should be considered at 10 because that definitely is a reach, right? But I think just the fit I really like and just how they use their power forwards.
So Kevin O'Connor has him 18. I think ESPN has him in like the late teens as well. So I don't think it's as crazy of a reach as you think. I think he's definitely in the range that we're talking about when it comes to like these 2 to 3 guys we're going to bring up. The comparison I want to make here, which is like they're completely different players, even if they're both wings. Do you remember watching like Matisse Thybulle at Washington, and offensively there was like some scoring there, but he clearly like couldn't create his own shot, if that makes sense. And what I mean by that is like the handle and like the like ability to create space and all that kind of stuff wasn't that good. But even when you watched him like do things off the dribble, it still ended in like a pretty good result more often than not. And that primarily had to do with the fact that they just knew where to go and knew where the passes were and were able to make those passes. And that's what I kind of see with him. I think that he's just a type of guy where I hadn't really seen him at all, to be honest, in like the past month or so. And he was one of the half dozen guys I had left to really get going here before we got into draft season. And I really liked what I saw. I definitely think that he is someone who should be under consideration when the Suns pick. I love the comparisons that Kevin O'Connor has down here of Damari Carroll and Jay Crowder, because that's pretty much what you're talking about here, like the 6'7", 6'8". The guy who's like quote unquote too small to play power forward. But that doesn't really exist now, where you looked at like power forward and small forward 10 years ago, you had these guys who were like quote unquote tweeners. And like, I guess he is a quote unquote tweener, but tweeners don't really exist in terms of like physicals anymore. They more exist in terms of your skills. Like if you can't shoot or you can't handle or whatever, but he can do a lot of that. I would say like the only hesitation I have with him, like I said, is where I think that it's more just of hesitations on his explosion. I think that O'Connor notes this year under his minuses, not an explosive player. He lacks a quick first step and shows little burst on the drive or hops around the rim. That's where I worry about spending a lottery pick on him, because it just has so much to do with his value. And I say that offensively as well, because I think that if he had a quicker first step, you could have a guy who's like a two dribble. That's where Cam exceeds, right? We talk about Cam lacking athleticism last draft, but his first step is actually really quick, and it's really great enough for him to be a two dribble and make the right decision type of guy. I don't know if Bay has that quick enough of a first step, and that's where I hesitate a little bit to rank him this high, like in terms of like a real option at 10. But I do think he's a guy like the 15 to 20 range, like on a Suns board. He should definitely be there. What do you think of the shot? Is it as good as advertised in terms of 45% on five attempts a game? It's a pretty enticing number.
Yeah, I obviously not that high, but I think even if it's 37, 38, I think that's pretty realistic to me. And obviously he has to have help to get it off in the NBA more, just because he's not super like a Channing Frye length guy. But yeah, I just like his mix, where like we talked about Denny, his lack of a shot hurting the off the bounce game. And I think Bay has that nice combination where he has a little bit of both, that they're both going to be accentuated just because he's not terrible at one of those things.
He's at 18 for Villanova. Do you think he's big enough to where we're maybe putting him in the wrong class and he could just be a small ball big like all the time?
Yeah, I don't know. He kind of looks like that, where you're almost just like he's kind of just a shorter power forward. But I think maybe, I don't know, it's one of those things where you like watch guys develop in the league and they like lose weight actually, or look like they lose weight. So I don't really know there.
Me neither. It's really hard. I think those are the most difficult guys to figure out, is like who. I think it's kind of obvious when guys translate to being like a small ball big from the wing, but like, can you actually like do this all the time? It's a really tough thing to see, and something I think you need to just see in like the regular game. I would feel more confident there for that specific position though. And my guy in this kind of range for wings is Patrick Williams out of Florida State, 6'8" height, 6'11" wingspan, 225. Just under 19 years old, just got done with his freshman season at Florida. He averaged 9 points, 4 rebounds, an assist, a steal, and a block a game. 29 games played. He did not start for Florida State. He came off the bench 22.5 minutes a game, took 7 shots a game, made 46% of them, 32% on his 1.7 attempts from three a game, and then at free throw line, 84% on 2.6 attempts per game. The big case I made for Patrick Williams the first time I wrote about him on our site is that if you look across the league, guys that are basically just a little bit bigger, a little bit stronger, like these quote-unquote power wings, I think everyone is kind of looking for this guy, essentially. And this kind of guy is why Harrison Barnes keeps getting paid so much money. This is what people have wanted Rudy Gay to be forever. Draymond Green and PJ Tucker are really like the only two examples that come to mind. And then recently with the way Houston was using Robert Covington, but just a guy that is a great enough to defender to check ball handlers and really have like 1-5 versatility, but there's real power to their game where they can not be a liability on the glass and they can really truly play small ball five. They can check fours. And really what it comes down to is those guys are the best matchups for guys like Kawhi, guys like LeBron, guys like Paul George. You're looking at wings that are 6'8", 6'9", and you're looking for more strength than quickness. Like, this is more of the defender you're talking about, and that's where Robert Covington became one of the best defenders in the league. I just see a lot of that physically with Williams, and it's like a really unique just a package overall athletically that I just don't think we really see that often to kind of hit on it there. And then when you watch him play, there's a lot there. His passing is very good in terms of degree of difficulty. He can make a lot of difficult passes. Now, I think that his ability in terms of how difficult of passes they are that he makes, as opposed to his consistency, is where the trade-off is, and he needs to get more consistent. But the little reads, I think he needs to make them more, but he can make them. The shot looks good. I don't hate it. The numbers aren't that great from three, but the free throw percentage was pretty good. I think that where I hesitate on him is not defensively either. I really liked him in terms of just off ball, and especially as a shot blocker. He took on that role for Florida State as kind of like the extra bit of rim protection that they wanted, and he brought it. On the ball, I liked him too. I just wonder how much he can do offensively to kind of stay on the floor while everything else comes together. But like, he is the guy for me where if like it's between him and Okoro, it's like no contest. I just think that Williams shows so much more potential offensively in terms of like the playmaking. And then like defensively, I just think that overall together, I think that Williams isn't a better defender right now without a doubt. And I don't even know if he could even become as like catch up to Okoro eventually, but I don't think the gap is that crazy. And I think that extra bit of length and size that he brings is important. He's a guy that's ranked in like the 10 to 15 range. So he's right around where the Suns are. And I just see a high IQ guy that's like, that's in there that not a lot of, that I don't think a lot of people are seeing. I actually think he's a really smart player and kind of gets like miscast a little bit as someone who's more raw than people think. Well, where are you on this, on him, Kevin? Do you think he's more raw? Do you think there's more than meets the eye? Like I'm saying, where are you at?
I just don't know. Like, there's hardly much tape on him just because of how he wasn't playing extensive minutes, and he wasn't taking a lot of threes, and he wasn't getting really, I just don't know like his potential as an offensive player. And when you're drafting, like if you're at 10 and you're the Suns, like how good is that shot? I actually don't really know. I know he shot 32%, but and it looks fine, but I just don't know what his potential is, because we have so little film of him. Like, what do you foresee him becoming ultimately? Like, is he just going to be knocked down an open shot here and there, attack the glass, and defend type of guy? And I guess off of that, it's whether you see other guys just not having that well-rounded game when you're drafting at 10 or wherever you're drafting.
Well, you and the listeners let me get away with some version of Draymond that's obviously worse than Draymond, like homeless Draymond. Can I say that? Is that allowed? And by homeless Draymond, that's like not a negative thing. That's saying like, obviously like Draymond's like one of the best defenders that we've had in like a really long time. I don't really think it's there, but you look at Draymond just being everywhere and being able to do, you would never find Draymond's one of those defenders like Marcus Smart, where whoever he is matched up on or whatever spot he's at on the floor, you're not like, not even concerned, but you're like, he's about to make a play. He's about to lock this guy up. You're so confident in what he's about to do.
Yeah.
And I feel like he can be that type of like overall defender.
So you don't care about what he, if offensively he's just like, he might knock down a three, but not that often. Like, do you care even?
I think that the passing and ball handling flashes that I saw were encouraging enough for me to look past that.
Gotcha.
I think that he can just make quick ball rotations, be on the offensive glass, just find enough of an offensive role. And this is where you look at Okoro and you look at him. If everything we were hearing about Okoro was the same thing, and this is, I have no idea if like the buzz about like the kid in terms of Williams is good or bad, but if everything we were hearing about Okoro, we were hearing about Williams, I would feel just even more confident in him figuring out the offensive role. It sounds like Okoro is going to figure out an offensive role no matter what. I would need Williams too for sure, but like we just kind of play that exercise. Like, here are the eight guys who are likely gone when the Suns are up. I think he's one of the next five up. I think he is for sure.
Yeah.
I think it's funny doing like the boards and like the ranking prospects and stuff, because you actually have to, once you get closer to the draft and we have more of these conversations like on the podcast and then in passing or whatever, and talking about it with other people in other formats, that's where you actually like really take it seriously. Like, I think I might have had him ranked ahead of Vassell or right around where Vassell is. But I think if push came to shove and they were both on the board, I would take Vassell. And I just said Vassell again, so that's still in my head, apparently. I would take Vassell over him. Like, if it's up there on the board, I would. And I'm not even sure if I had Williams or Vassell ranked higher. Would I take him over Abdia? I don't know. I think I had it ranked like that. I think I might. I think I really might. I think Abdia is like the slightly better prospect, but I actually think that Williams just has more appeal. I don't know. I'm screwed, Kevin. I'm too far in to go out at this point. I don't know what else to say. Do you think he's one of those guys for the Suns where you look at that grouping and you kind of say, after those eight guys we mentioned, where we're talking about like Hayes, Vassell, is he one of the next three guys up for you?
Probably not.
Probably not. Okay.
I just feel like I know other guys have something where I'm like, I can stamp of approval, certifiably say like Aaron Nesmith's like a really good shooter.
I am intoxicated by upside, in which upside barely exists in this draft. I'll say that there is no upside like almost anywhere with this draft. You really struggle to find guys where you're looking at how much better they can be in a couple of years. And that's where I think Killian Hayes gets ranked so highly. I think that's part of why we love Kyra Lewis so much. And I guess for me, I'm seeing the upside more on him. Really, really other than anyone else.
Hey, ESPN does have him above Vassell, above all these other guys, other than Denny, pretty much, right? So,
okay. And I was giving myself too much credit, by the way. I have him 12 on a Suns board, so I'm not nearly – I didn't get nearly as high as him as I thought. But, yeah, I like him. I like him a lot. Or no, that was before. That
stand
was
my, by your man. Stand by him.
I might have ranked him higher. Shoot, I don't know. I'll have to look for this in a second. where are you at with Nesmith? He's the other guy that we should talk about. I'll get his page up here shortly because we're talking about this 10-20 range. I know we just said like the your guy, the dark horse thing, but there's basically a fifth guy to mention here, and there's not really a way to wiggle in him. And that's not to say we like him or don't like him, but. Aaron Nesmith out of Vanderbilt is a guy that's ranked in this 13-20 range, like right outside the lottery, right in the lottery. A sophomore wing out of Vanderbilt, 6'6", 6'10", wingspan, 213 is the weight. He weighs 20 years old. Really weird season because he only played 14 games, but in those 14 games, he was awesome. He averaged 23 points a game, 5 rebounds, an assist, a steal and a half, and a block, 51% from the field on 15 shots a game. He took 8 threes a game in those 14 games, Kevin, and he hit 52.2% of them.
Ooh,
He took 4.5 free throws a game as well and shot 82.5% from the line. So that he took 115 threes in 14 games, and he made 52% of them. As Kevin O'Connor says here, describes him as a flamethrower jump shot. That is the appeal here. And you worry about 14 games and 52% and all that, and you worry about sample size. But when you watch him, and there's a couple of videos out there, if you just search his name and that I've tweeted too, the way Jerry Stackhouse, yes, his coach Jerry Stackhouse, used him, a lot of off-ball movement, a lot of just catch-and-shoot kind of stuff designed plays for him as the primary option off-ball. And I think the shot is the real deal. I think that there's a little bit of scoring upside too there, like 23, I hate to say it, but 23 points per game is not an accident. So I think that there's some scoring upside there with him that I don't think is there with many guys in this class. But I will say that, like Cam, you just kind of hesitate about the athleticism on both ends of the court. And he's one of the guys I'm the most interested to talk about with people where I ask, like, what did you think when you watched him? Because it's like you see the numbers, you're like, whoa. And then you just really kind of want to see what you got there. So what did you think when you saw what you saw of him, Kevin?
I mean, the first thing that jumps out is just how balanced and how fast he moves, like when he is working off the ball to get into his shots. Have really high release point. And I mean, the results speak for themselves there. I don't know. Like I said, there's just a certifiably good skill set he has there. Free throw numbers are good. He didn't even average an assist this past year in 36 minutes a game. And so you kind of have to project out and say, okay, well, what are we getting here? Like, do we want just this one great skill, or do we actually think he can be more? And I don't really know, because Vanderbilt's not a great team, but it's like, okay, if you have that good of a player, why wasn't he asked to do more, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Right. And, it's tricky, huh?
Yeah. Weren't they pretty terrible?
Weren't great.
Yeah, they were bad.
That's bad team alert on him for sure. Yeah. Gosh, it's so conflicting. I really wish he was like more of a widely talked about prospect. Like I said, like whenever I see his name anywhere or someone wrote something on him, I want to read about it, because I just want to see where people landed. Because, man, you can go all over the place with him. The assist numbers are concerning, but then when you watch the team, it's like, I don't know, man. Like, he kind of just had to go out there and score. And you know what? When you're shooting 52% from three and 45% from the field, averaging 23 a game and doing everything you can, like, I guess you don't really, like, you shouldn't really look to pass to your terrible teammates. I don't know. But again, watching him, I didn't get a great vibe for if he wasn't a 0.5 type of player. You watch Cam and you watch Mikal, and even someone like Kelly has some 0.5 appeal to like the way that he plays. At least he makes quick decisions off the bounce. Even if it is to score most of the time, I didn't land in a spot where I think he can't be that guy, but I also didn't land in a spot where he could. And that's where I hesitate in ranking him any higher than, like, I just looked, I have him 14, like looking at the Suns specifically. I think that's right about where he needs to be, but the shooting, man, like there's, I hate to like,
it's good. Yeah.
Like, yeah. I hate to really like compact a player into a Kyle Korver, Jason Capono, whatever kind of archetype, but he's like on the way there. Like it really looked that good to me. Right. I'm not exaggerating.
Yeah.
Those are all time great shooters, so I shouldn't go that high, but you get what I'm saying. Like the guy who is specifically a sharp shooter, like he can be that good.
It's fun to watch him, just like if you just pull up his shooting highlights and do nothing else about his defense or his on-ball stuff. I also wanted to point this out, since I said his team was awful. They were 8-6 when he played. They went 3-15 after he got hurt.
Oh, my gosh. I'm glad you brought up the defense. The defense is a concern. It is.
Yeah.
Concerned to the point where some people are like, this guy shouldn't be a first round pick. That's how like bad it was apparently. But again, optics and like how terrible the team was and how much he had to do, I don't know. It's so intriguing. I hope like people listening, if there's one guy to like go and like just even watch like YouTube highlights of, like watch him and let us know what you think. Cause I'm really intrigued by him. And I think, do we have to like mention the fact that like he's going to be under consideration for the Suns? Like obviously he shot 52% from three and is really good, like moving off ball and stuff. I think obviously with his shooting alone, he would be someone, but I think the best way to like describe him is Kevin O'Connor and the Ringer's NBA guide, which I've been using to kind of read off the heights and stuff, for these, the measurables for these guys. They have like these little player attribute cards next to them. And he only has two next to his name, which is perimeter shooter and hustle. Like those are the only two. So they didn't have really anything else to put down for him essentially. And I think that's kind of accurate. It's like really, what else is he besides a shooter? And it was such a unique situation where we didn't really know what to get out of him. There's one name to kind of wrap up on here where like we'll kind of share our dark horse name and we'll explain why. And I can explain now. Kevin O'Connor's guide has Desmond Bane up to 20 on his list. I believe he's moved him up quite a bit. Desmond Bane, the senior wing out of TCU. But really after that, if you look at wings he labels specifically, he's got Robert Woodard out of Mississippi State at 22, Josh Green out of U of A at 25, Jaden McDaniels out of Washington at 26, and then I keep on scrolling looking for a wing, and then I don't get to one until Tyler Bay out of Colorado at 36. So this is a wing group where if there are teams in the back half of the first round, specifically like playoff teams that made it a series or two in the 20 to 30 range, that are looking to like steal one of those kind of wings. I don't think they're going to be able to this year. I think they're going to all be gone. I think this is like a good assessment for O'Connor in terms of what now I'm evaluating him. Good assessment. Jesus. I think it's like really good, a really good range. Like I think all those guys will be gone by 20. And Desmond Bane is one of them. A senior out of TCU, 6'6", 6'5", wingspan. Uh-oh. 215 pounds. Going to be 22 by the draft, it appears. We talked about him a lot recently. He shot 44.2% from three this year on 6.5 attempts per game. He averaged 16.6 points per game, six rebounds, four assists, a steal and a half, a half a block, 45% from the field on 13 shot attempts per game. He only took 1.8 free throws a game, 79% from the line. Really great shooter. In my opinion, he's the best shooter in the draft just because Nesmith has a little bit too small of a sample size. And again, like that situation was so wild, I don't really know what to make of it. But there's 4 years of shooting to go off of for Bane. He's 43% three-point shooter for his career off of 575 attempts at TCU. You watch the shot, the range on it, it's super legit. He's smart. He plays super hard. He knows how to make passes. He already has a skip pass to the corner down, which he added in his senior year when they asked him to do more ball handling, and he responded by adding more assists than he had. He averaged 3.9 assists this year after averaging 2.4 the year before. I like him a lot. I think that he is like around like a top 15 guy in maybe this class, and then like definitely for the Suns. He's, as I wrote, Kevin, if we are to rank the five guys who check the most boxes in terms of the James Jones, what James Jones looks for in a guy, he's in the top five, right? Just strictly based off that.
Yeah, for sure. Also, we talked to them.
Yeah, he did. They had meetings last year, or not meetings, I should say. At some point, they talked last year while he went through the pre-draft process, and they already talked this year. He noted that he had a nice long conversation with James Jones. I believe he was talking about this year. And he kind of like went like, yeah, I kind of see much like James Jones. Yeah, I kind of see like the comparison in our games. He's pretty great.
Yeah, I mean, again, like kind of like Bay, it's just all around well-rounded, lots of evidence, even more obviously than Bay, of him being a really good shot. And yeah, you know the history. It will be interesting.
It will be. I'm going to be – there's a very high chance that he is going to be on the board when the Suns are at 10, and there is going to be a large – not a large part of me, but a decent-sized part of me that, like, is convinced that he's going to be the pick just based off of – we know the fact that they talked to him a couple of times. I'm sure if they work him out, it'll only increase from there. Just everything that he does well. To end this, Kevin, here's what we are going to do. We went through seven guys. Let's rank them. Let's rank all seven based on the Suns, where they're going to go. So we've got Avdija, Okoro, Vassell, Nesmith, Bay, Williams, and Bane. You got to rank the seven.
To rank them now.
Okay.
Suns-centric, right?
Suns-centric. I think I would have Vassell one. I think I would have Vassell one. Avdija's shot scares me a little bit too much, so I would probably go Vassell one, Avdija two. Oh, man, it's really hard between Williams, Bane, and Nesmith. That's, like, very close for me. I'll go Vassell, Avdija, Bane, Williams, Nesmith, Bay, and then Okoro. I'm going to put Okoro seventh because I'm a savage. Whoa. Yep.
Oh, who am I missing? Oh, here we go.
I think so. Williams, Bane, and Nesmith, like I said, is super close for me, and Bay, honestly. I think all four of those guys are firmly in like that 12 to 18 point in the draft. I think that I just put Bane up there just because of the check marks, like I said. And I think that like identity and culture in a team and how quickly guys fit in really matters. I think we learned that recently in the NBA postseason, Kevin, with what the Miami Heat have done. And I think that he's one of their guys. And that matters to me, like specifically from like my evaluation standpoint of looking for guys that fit with them.
All right. I'm going to go Pavdia, Vassell. I'm going to put Okoro here just because I think that they – I don't know. I don't know why. I think Auburn does fall in the – they will draft someone from Auburn, obviously, last year with
– Nice.
Yeah.
They would use him in the right way. I just keep picturing his defender leaving him and just, like, I can't do it. What group is out there where it's okay for that to happen? I don't know.
And then from there I have Bane, Bay, and then Nesmith and Williams. Nesmith more just because all the question marks. That was a weird program, weird situation, not much evidence. And then Williams, kind of the same thing, not much evidence. Even though obviously he's Vassell's teammate, but I just think that Vassell, you have some certifiably good, you know, stuff to him.
It's a really intriguing group, right? I'm not going to like make us play the guessing game on the spot again, but like if you had to guess who like the best wing is out of the top three wings out of this group, like it could be any seven of those guys, right? Like in any order in terms of the three best in the league. I have no idea. And it could be someone we're not talking about, obviously, too.
Josh Green, Jaden McDaniels. And then after that, it's not pretty, but yeah.
Fun group for sure. I'm really excited to just see where all those guys land. Like if sad RIP, if Summer League existed, like that would be like the matchup of like, I would want to be there when Avdija like played Nesmith or whatever, you know what I mean? Like that yeah. I would be really excited to see like those guys specifically playing against each other. And specifically for guys like those two guys, Nesmith and Williams, it's like where if Coles Wicker talks about it all the time, and he actually does this, he ranks guys after the draft because where they land really matters in team situation. If those guys land in like the right situation, I think like they bump up automatically if they like find the right kind of home. But if they don't, then you're more worried. Or again, like that's specifically probably more for Williams. With Nesmith, again, it's like it's a mystery box. Who knows? All right, everyone. We've gone long, as always. We will talk to you next week. We'll wrap up with the bigs. Yes, there are big men. We will talk about Obi Toppin and the dunks. Doesn't he do the dunks, Kevin? Oh, boy, does he.
Oh, I've heard that, actually, yes.
I've seen them, too. They're impressive. We'll talk about them next week, and if the Suns can draft the next Amari Stoudemire. Bye-bye.
Uh-oh.